I would like to start with a provocative statement which was presented many times, for example, in the review by Stefano and Andre on galaxy cluster cosmological simulation, is that does it really make sense to do cluster modeling, cluster of galaxy modeling, without doing the galaxy properly first? And I will try to give you an example of an attempt for that. So I will start by the beginning, namely a very short historical and state-of-the-art review of galaxy formation and the role of feedback in two main flavors, namely supernovae and AGN. Then I will highlight the role of AGN feedbacks already in Milky Way-sized halos, and then move to the scale we are interested in, namely clusters of galaxies. And here I will report a simulation of one single zoom simulation of a Virgo-like cluster, so a small cluster, because it's easier to do a small cluster with high resolution. And I will report some results we have on the properties of BCG formation. So one very strong constraint we have on galaxy formation and star formation efficiency in those galaxies is given by the so-called abundance matching techniques, which basically just try to match the number density of dark matter halos in n-body simulation with the luminosity function of the observed luminosity function of galaxies. And so if you assign a function which is a stellar to halo mass fraction, which has this shape here, then you can match the luminosity function of galaxies given the underlying halo distribution function. So there are two dips in this stellar to halo mass fraction, one at high mass, which is believed to be due to AGN feedback or to some cooling efficiency decreasing. And the other dip is on low mass, which is believed to be due to supernovae feedback or maybe to some star formation efficiency deficit at low mass. So this is basically the main, in the galaxy formation theory, this is the two entry points for feedback on the low mass end, supernovae, on the high mass end, AGN. So what are the status of present-day galaxy formation simulation? Well, it's better than it used to be 10 years ago. So you see a plot showing the angular momentum of disk galaxy as a function of the rotational velocity for an observed sample here. And here, all the symbols below are a set of early simulation performed by Navarro and Steinmetz at low resolution. And you have this deficit of angular momentum, one order of magnitude, which was called the angular momentum problem. So the disks were too compact, too small. So if now you look at present-day galaxy, so this is a nice image, which show you an example of a Ramses galaxy with some nice rendering of the realistic image. And you see that you have a nice spiral that compares favorably with this big bulge-dominated galaxy here. And so the reason for this better agreement with data, we'll show you some more quantitative plot later, is that the resolution has increased a lot, for one. But for two, the supernovae feedback schemes that we are using are now more efficient, more powerful. So if now you plot more quantitatively where those, I would say, modern galaxy, simulated galaxy lies in the Tully-Fisher relation, you see that if you measure very carefully, and I will come to this point later, the rotational velocity in the outskirts of the galaxy in your simulated objects, then you kind of match the observational data set here with galaxies which are below, above, or on the Tully-Fisher relation. So you may have some outlier, like this AMR simulation here, which is a bit compact, but the agreement is much better. But now if you look in more details, the rotation curve of those objects, you see that the point in the previous plot, the rotational velocity was measured in a clever way at this outer radius here. So you take the minimum value for the rotational velocity, but observed galaxies are a flat rotation curve. So actually, people are using the maximum rotational velocity, while here we are basically computing the minimum. So it means that simulated galaxies are still not matching the observed universe because the rotation curve are peaked towards the center. So they are still somehow too compact. They are actually bulge dominated. So especially now, if you move to very large halos, you have very highly peaked rotation curves, very compact disk, or if you manage to play with your feedback scheme, like this Cecilia Scannapieco et al. Series of paper, they have a very efficient supernovae feedback scheme which remove efficiently the inner mass from the galaxy, but at a very strong price, at a very steep price, which is that the disk is completely destroyed. And so it seems that there is two options here. Either you form a very small disk, a very compact disk, so you have a disk-dominated system, but very small, or you end up with a bulge-dominated system with no more mass in the disk, with strong feedback. So the situation is not that good, as you can see. So the two main ingredients we are playing with here in those simulations, besides the whole cosmological context, hydrodynamics and body, etc., are star formation, for one, and feedback, for two. Star formation, we're using some standard Schmidt law parametrized with this efficiency parameter, and usually this parameter is calibrated on the Kennicott relation, which is here a recent example of the Kennicott relation for nearby spiral here. Then you have more distant galaxies, starbursts, Ulyaks, and high redshift disks. So you see you have a huge scatter in this relation depending on the redshift and the environment. And even within a rather homogeneous sample, namely nearby spiral, you have one order of magnitude discrepancy between the galaxies. So usually what people are doing, they are calibrating their relation on the average relation, but no galaxy is sitting actually on the average. Then, in terms of feedback, I think the situation is even more confusing. And personally, I don't really know where we're going here. So you have basically supernova feedback, where I've listed here only four, but there are more numerical implementations available in the literatures. So you have thermal feedback. So you basically you dump thermal energy proportional to 10 to the 15 erg per supernovae. You have a delay cooling mechanism that was proposed. You have runaway stars in order to dump energy outside dense regions. You have some kinetic feedback with a wind velocity. And then, of course, you have metal enrichment that give rise to a positive feedback, namely more cooling, so even more compact galaxies. Then, at the other end, you have AGN feedback, which is a completely different approach based on the growth of supermassive black hole. It was already discussed in the previous talk. And then, in between, I would say something which kind of mimic the transition from one to the two, there is this momentum-driven feedback proposed by those authors, in which you just drive a wind at the velocity proportional to the virial velocity of the halo. So now, here I will report a simulation performed with Oscar Agertz on a Milky Way-sized object with a standard thermal dump and delay cooling. So this is our fiducial model here with a 5% efficiency and 10 to the 51 erg. And you see you have a bulge-dominated galaxy. And we decompose the galaxy into a bulge, bar, and disk component using standard techniques. And if you increase the feedback efficiency by invoking the highly unlikely supernova energy, you manage to reduce the bulge-to-disk ratio. And if you decrease the efficiency in star formation, you also manage to get something which is more disk-dominated object and a pseudo-bulge. And so this is basically our best model here, which is a model with a very low star formation efficiency, where we manage to have a circular velocity curve here, which is almost flat. So the fiducial model is here, so it's a peaky rotation curve. But by reducing the star formation efficiency, we may end up with a galaxy which is a flat rotation curve. So here, our best model for the Milky Way would be a small halo mass with 7 times 10 to the 11 solar mass. And then we get most of the observational property. Again, to show you that our star formation efficiencies are consistent with observation, you see that they match the distribution of star formation efficiencies in the Kennicott-Schmidt law diagram of the nearby spirals. But there is a big issue here, that although the final galaxy looks like a Milky Way, it fails miserably in terms of baryon fraction in the stellar component if you believe in abundance matching. So this curve here shows the star to halo mass fraction I defined in the beginning for a 10 to the 12 solar mass halo, and you see that it's at 20%. And our successful quote-unquote simulation is sitting here at almost 75%. So it means that if you believe in abundance matching, the Milky Way should have a halo mass which is large, which is like 10 to the 12, 2 times 10 to the 12. And if you believe in our modeling, the Milky Way halo should be small. So there is a discrepancy here. And with supernova feedback, there is no way we can resolve this, at least with the modeling we are considering here. So we probably need AGN feedback. So AGN feedback and galaxy evolution are tightly coupled through this relation that we briefly mentioned before. And the point here to take away is that the relation is tightly coupled at high mass, and you have a huge scatter here. The Milky Way sit here, but you have a galaxy of the same mass for which the black hole is almost 100 times more massive. So it's a very different galaxy with very different black hole mass. So the black hole model, the supermassive black hole growth and feedback model we're considering is the one that was presented before. Just one comment that these three parameters need to be calibrated on the M sigma relation. We found that this calibration depends on resolution. So that's a very critical point. So you need to recalibrate this each time you do a new simulation at a better resolution. So it's not perfect, and this is a very simple model. There is no way this model might be connected to any physical reality. It's just a way to dump thermal energy and see what is the effect on the baryon being ejected or on the star formation efficiency. So we apply this model for a Milky Way-sized halo, which is part of an ongoing project of code comparison. And the interesting thing we found is that we can eject almost 80% of the baryon from the virial radius using this model for this particular halo. But the price to pay for that is that the bulge to total is going to sky high, so there is basically no more disk. The disk is completely crippled, and we end up with a dead spheroid. So this problem can be summarized here in this diagram, where we have the stellar mass of the central galaxy as a function of the halo mass, and you have this relation that comes from abundance matching, from observation and matching n-body data. And our Milky Way halo, our small mass Milky Way halo is here. So it's an outlier, it's borderline, it's 3 sigma, okay. Our high mass Milky Way halo without AGN feedback is out there. And if we include AGN feedback, we end up with a dead galaxy, spheroidal, but right on the abundance matching constraints, which suggests that in average, galaxies need to have very efficient feedback already starting at the Milky Way scale. Maybe AGN, maybe something else. And what we are interested in now is to study what happens at the high mass end, where it's much more difficult to get meaningful results, at least results that compare favorably with observation. So how much do I have? Great. So now we'll move to the cluster scales. So we made a simulation of a galaxy cluster, which is roughly the size of Virgo. Without AGN feedback on the top, and with AGN feedback on the bottom. And so there is roughly 10 million dark matter particles in the virial radius, and the resolution is half a kiloparsec. So we're talking about a pretty high resolution simulation, which is enough to have meaningful result at the Milky Way scale. So the galaxy we form, Milky Way size object we form in this simulation, are properly captured in terms of resolution, borderline. But still, we are simulating them within a cluster environment. So what you see here is that in the stellar distribution on the left, you have a huge BCG in the center here, and you have a very large amount of intracluster light, while in the AGN case, it's much dimmer, and you have much less stars. Same thing for the gas distribution. You end up with gas-rich disks all over the place, while here, you have very little gas left in the galaxies. And interestingly enough, the dark matter distribution is very different. Here you end up with a spherical halo, while here it's much more elongated in one direction. So those results are consistent with AGN driving a lot of energy and removing the cooling catastrophe. So you have here the supermassive black hole growth with accretion rate, which is sporadic. And when the accretion rate, which is the black line, reach the red line, it means that you are accreting at the Eddington rate. So you see that you have a succession of bursts of Eddington accretion, followed by a long period of Bondi accretion. And so now if we look at the result of this, the mass distribution in this cluster, you see that, so in red or green, this is the no AGN case, where you have a huge baryon fraction in the center. So this is the cumulative, and this is the local baryon fraction. So you're completely dominated by baryon in the center, and you slowly converge towards the universal value at high radius. Now, if you go to the AGN case, you see that you have a deficit of baryon, roughly in this case, roughly 10% at the very radius here, 10-20%, which is more or less consistent with what we see. And where are those baryons? Actually, they are right outside the very radius. They've been expulsed by the AGN feedback, and they basically accumulate between 1 and 2 R200. And so this is due to shocks expulsing baryons at all redshift, especially at high redshift, as was said before. Now, if you look at the mass distribution, so let's focus on the rightmost plot here. This is the dark matter mass. You see that without AGN feedback, you have a very strong adiabatic contraction of the dark halo that can be well fitted by a simple analytical model of adiabatic contraction. But with AGN feedback, you have a slight adiabatic expansion of the dark halo due to the fact that 10% of the baryon has been removed outside of the dark halo. And so this, of course, changed considerably the mass distribution, especially in the core of the cluster within the central 10 kPC, where you have one order of magnitude less mass in case of AGN feedback. So now, if you look at the galaxy properties the central galaxy property that we are getting, so without AGN feedback, we have the blue point here, which is completely crazy. It's more like 10 sigma. So this kind of galaxy just don't exist in the universe. But if you put AGN feedback, you end up with a stellar mass, which is consistent with abundance matching, although slightly low. And you see that you have actually less stellar mass for the central galaxy of this cluster than the Milky Way model we had without AGN feedback. So it's a very strong reduction of stellar mass in the central galaxy. So again, a way to discuss the properties of our simulated BCG. So in this plot showing the effective size or the half light size versus the central velocity dispersion, we move from this crazy point here, which is outside any data from the Sloan catalog, to the left here, where we are consistent with the largest object in the Sloan catalog. And just for comparison, we have here two models. So that's a Milky Way size halo without AGN modeled by Thorsten Nabb. And that's a group size halo without AGN modeled by Robert Feldman, which is already slightly inconsistent with the data, although the halo mass is one order of magnitude smaller than this one. So you have a sequence here of no AGN run, which for the cluster scale is completely, you cannot basically fit any data with this point. So that's why cluster scale simulation for central galaxies are really, really difficult, and they give you results which are completely inconsistent with the data. Although for group and Milky Way size halo, it's borderline, but it's still compatible. So now another property which I think interesting in those giant elliptical galaxies is the presence of a core elliptical at the center of the elliptical. So you have two examples of observed galaxies in Virgo with a nice core here, and the size is roughly 1 kiloparsec. And here you have just a different power law, but the size is almost 10 kiloparsec. So the break occurs at six kiloparsec here, while here you have a nice core that occurs at 1 kiloparsec. And this core elliptical with small ellipticities are typical of large elliptical galaxies in clusters. And if you move to smaller galaxies, you have elliptical galaxies that show a mass excess in the center, quite the opposite, and large ellipticities. And those are usually also fast rotators. So this dichotomy in the structure of elliptical galaxies can be actually reproduced by our simulation by comparing the no AGN on the right and the AGN on the left, bright BCG. So you have a much dimmer object here on the left, but much larger with a small ellipticity, while here you have a very bright object, but smaller. So this black line here, the half mass contour or half light contour, and with a larger ellipticity. So this dichotomy seems to be at work here. So if we fit playing the same game that the observer, those profiles with Sirchik fits, the AGN case gives us a core, a very large core, actually, 10 kPC, with a constant flattening of the density at the inner part. So the resolution, twice the resolution, actually, is this gray region here. So it's two cell size. So it's a conservative resolution limit here. And you see that the no AGN case gives us a mass excess in the center, which again is reminiscent of this dichotomy we see in the data. Again, the no AGN case gives us a very high velocity dispersion because we have this huge mass in the center due to the overcooling, while the AGN case gives us something of the order of 250 kilometers per second in the center, and it's a slow rotator, while the no AGN case gives us a fast rotator. And you see that the M87 have a velocity dispersion of the order of 350, say, which is not completely inconsistent, although larger than our galaxy. So we have something which is consistent here. So one big question we are asking here is that where does this core come from? So this mass excess is easily explainable by the fact that when we have gas-rich merger, you create star formation bursts at the center of the galaxies, which create this mass excess. But the core, that's another question. And what was proposed in order to explain the core we see in BCG in clusters is this scenario of black hole scoring. Namely, you have black holes spiraling inward and losing energy and ultimately they merge. And while you do that, you transfer angular momentum to the stars, and you basically remove mass from the inner part and put it at higher angular momentum. So this was proposed by Merritt and collaborators. And here you have the mass, the accumulated mass of black holes for various redshifts. So you see that this mass is growing, and basically you have black hole merging towards the central part of the galaxy, at the end building up the central black hole mass of 4 times 10 to the 9 solar mass. And while those black holes merge, they spiral in and they remove angular momentum in the stellar they lose angular momentum and give it to the stellar component. The other scenario is actually that when you have strong AGN bursts, the gas mass is expulsed. And so you have gravitational energy, gravitational binding energy being removed suddenly, and so the stars which are bound suddenly become unbound and they migrate from the inner part and create this core. So this is analogous to what was proposed by Governato and collaborators to explain their dwarf galaxy simulation where they created a dark matter core in the inner part of the dwarf. So it's a very similar mechanism that we see here. This plot comes from the Cormandy paper, where you have this mass excess, so the mass that was removed from the inner part of the BCG and put at larger radii. And this mass excess is observed in many ellipticals here. So that's the black hole mass. And you see the mass excess that comes from the fitting of the surface brightness profile. And so you see that you have a mass excess of the order of 10, 20 times the black hole mass. And so this is borderline consistent with a simulation performed by Merritt and collaborator, where they predict that you can have a mass deficit. Sorry, it's a mass deficit. Yeah, it's minus a mass excess. So it's a mass deficit. You can have a mass deficit of the order of one black hole mass per major merger. So here we have a mass deficit in our simulation of 20 times the final black hole mass. That's a lot. So it's probably so. A combination of the two scenarios, namely black hole spiraling in and gravitational binding energy being suddenly removed during the quasar phase of the AGN. So you see that our point here is consistent, although a little larger, than observation of those mass deficits. So now we can summarize our result in this diagram here, where we have a simulation of elliptical galaxies here. So one elliptical simulation performed by Thurston-Nabb of a Milky Way-sized object without AGN feedback, and you see that you're borderline at 3 sigma of the abundance matching constraints. This guy coming from a simulation performed by Robert Feldman, again without AGN feedback, you are starting to leave the diagram here. And then our simulation without AGN feedback, completely off the diagram. So the only way to put it back is to use AGN feedback, and then we are more or less within the constraints. So those are my conclusions. So the point here is that for Milky Way size objects, you may have objects which are not AGN dominated, but then in order to have flat rotation curve, you probably need to have low star formation efficiencies, and you have a high stellar mass fraction. And on the other end, around the same mass scale, you start to have AGN feedback acting on the star formation efficiency. But the price to pay for those small mass galaxies is to remove 80% of the baryon out of the viral radius, at least in our simulation. Then when you move to larger mass halo mass, you remove less and less baryons, and you can explain the star formation efficiency in those objects. And we find interesting properties for our simulated BCGs, which resemble a lot the dichotomy we see in observed ellipticals in clusters. Of course, there is this big caveat that there are a lot of numerical issues that I don't have time to discuss. I thank you very much.
So I'm going to take the liberty of having the first question, since I have the microphone. It seems to me that the AGN, the way in which you do the AGN feedback at the Milky Way scale is crucial. So could you comment about how you do it and how you would do it better? How would you like to do it?
Yes, very good point. So we are using the model that was proposed by Booth and Shai, and that we have adapted to the AMR techniques. Here is the model basically summarized. So the point here is that it's a thermal dump. And that's a thermal dump which is made in a way to avoid instantaneous cooling, so that we are probably maximizing the effect of AGN feedback, because we have no jets here. It's a pure isotropic, I mean, at least when we inject the energy, it's a thermal dump. But when you look at the simulated halo at the Milky Way scale, there is clearly a bipolar outflow. So on the other hand, it's very crude. It's a thermal energy injection. There is no jet, no cosmic ray, nothing. So this is probably something which corresponds to, I would say, the very efficient large mass supermassive black holes in Milky Way size halo, upper curve here. But probably in reality, you have a vast variety of feedback efficiencies, which give you different outcomes. So here we are really exploring something which is very efficient, but still what is interesting is that it gives you this point here, the green point, which is constantly sitting in the middle of the abundance matching constraints. So it means you are not completely off this sequence. So although I think it's a very efficient feedback scheme, the outcome is not that crazy.
Just two small curiosities. One is whether you check the bright end of the luminosity function in the cluster, so whether the effect is isolated in the BCG or whether you have effect also in the second or third brightest. And the second curiosity is whether you checked what happens with AGN feedback to the fraction of interstellar, intracluster light.
So it's true that the luminosity function, so the satellites are also affected. Actually, all the galaxies which are basically at the Milky Way scale and above are statistically affected by AGN feedback. So the whole stellar brightness of the... So you see that all those galaxies which are floating around here are brighter than their equivalent here. So there is a systematic shift for all galaxies towards the being dimmer. And the second question was... Yes, so the fraction of the intercluster light is much smaller, and that's probably due to two effects. First, you have less star to start with, but second, the potential well is much shallower in the AGN case. So when you have a satellite coming in and being stripped, or the effects are weaker because you have a shallower potential well because you don't have the overcooling. While if you don't have AGN feedback, you have a strong overcooling, the potential well is very dense. And so there is a trivial effect, I would say, which is that you have less star to play with, But you have also this more subtle effect, which is that the potential well is completely different. Yes. Yes, yes, it's true. And the galaxies are much more concentrated. Yeah. So the street fraction can be smaller, but I mean, it can go in all directions.
So I have a question about what you call the dichotomy in the mass excess. As you know, the results, this kind of results on the mass excess, the first time came out from the ACS Virgo cluster survey. This is the Cotet et al. And Ferrarese et al. And we have 100 galaxies that range, a vast range in luminosity, so that you really don't see a dichotomy, but you see a smooth transition between high mass to low mass ellipticals. So my question is, you have shown with the AGN feedback, you can reproduce mass excess or not mass excess. Can you reproduce this smooth transition without too much of a fine tuning?
Well, so the problem here is that we have only one halo. So statistically, we are not really convincing here. So we, as a function of time, for example, we see that the core slowly builds up. So if you have a gas-rich merger, you can replenish the mass deficit. And then if you have a sequence of black hole, if this process then start again with gas poor or dry mergers, then you can re-evacuate the mass. So it probably depends a lot on the merger history and the gas fraction into those mergers. So that would be my answer. So then if you do a much larger sample, maybe you will see all sorts of elliptical galaxies. But the point is that the largest galaxies, at least that's what I understood from the Cormandy paper, if you go to the largest objects, then you have dry galaxies systematically, dry mergers, and you see also more cores. But that's not my expertise, so we can discuss.
Thank you again. Our next speaker is Norbert Renner.